This is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. President Trump has fired the Commissioner of Labor and Statistics, Erica McIntarfer, after a weaker-than-expected jobs report in July and downward revisions made to May and June's job numbers, claiming they are fake numbers. Some businesses are reporting a slowdown in hires due to tariff uncertainty. KPMG Chief Economist Diane Swong.
Basically, with the revisions, we saw only 85,000 jobs a month created for all of 2025, and that's less than half the pace of what we saw in 2024, and I think that's very important.
ABC News has confirmed Ghislaine Maxwell has been transferred from a federal prison in Florida to an all-women's prison camp in Texas. Maxwell, who was Jeffrey Epstein's co-conspirator, is serving a 20-year prison sentence for the sex trafficking of minors. In Montana, at least four people are dead after a gunman opened fire at the Anaconda Deer Lodge outside of Butte. A manhunt underway for the suspect. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Kuska. An air quality advisory is in effect until noon on Saturday for all of Wisconsin. Federal prosecutors continue to move forward in their legal efforts against Wisconsin Judge Hannah Dugan. With more, here's Civic Media's Stuart J. Waddles.
The feds haven't changed their minds about Milwaukee County Judge Hannah Dugan. UrbanMilwaukee.com reports there was a filing from federal prosecutors this week arguing against her claim that she's immune from prosecution. It's the case accusing her of obstructing an ICE arrest. Prosecutors say her legal team's arguments stretch judicial immunity too far and ignore that judges can be charged with crimes even if they step outside their judicial role. A magistrate judge earlier this month recommended that the case move forward. U.S. District Judge Lynn Edelman will make the final call on whether the case goes to trial. A date on when a decision might come isn't known.
Multiple political events took place in western Wisconsin Thursday. The first was in La Crosse, where politicians and government employees spoke out against the federal omnibus bill known as the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, claiming it cuts funding for social programs, health care, and employment services. The second was in Prairie du Chien, where Congressman Mark Pocan held his fifth town hall event in the state's 3rd congressional district, which is represented by Derek Van Orden. Pocan also spoke out against the federal bill at that event. City government committees are all done for the month in La Crosse. The next committee meeting is Friday to review a gas station design. Then the bulk of regular committee meetings resume next Monday, where the city will consider an ordinance restricting the sale of hemp-derived cannabinoids to people ages 21 and over. City officials will also take up items to replace drinking fountains around La Crosse and meet to discuss the new city administrator position. The next common council meeting is on August 14th. Today will be hazy until the smoke clears out later this evening with highs in the 70s. Sunny skies carry through the weekend, with highs in most places in western Wisconsin topping out around 80 degrees. Overnight lows will be in the mid to upper 50s. Our next chance of rain showers will be early next week. We'll have more details in our Civic Media forecast. For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Kuska.
Welcome to the Brewers. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Brewers traded for outfielder Brandon Lockridge from the Padres just before the trade deadline yesterday. Tonight, the 28-year-old is starting in right field and batting in the leadoff spot. As the Brewers play the Nationals in Washington, D.C., Jackson Churio has gone on the IL, dealing with a hamstring injury. At 64 wins and 44 losses, Milwaukee heads into the weekend in first place in the NL Central and the best record in baseball. NFL, Packers training camp, padded practice today. Tomorrow night, it's family night. Tucker Kraft.
All the people of Green Bay, lucky 80,000, get to come pack the stadium out and just watch us practice. And it's not just an ordinary thing. It might be the only time some of those people get to get inside the stadium. And then the family aspect at the end of it, getting to go down the field. This year I'll be able to have my own daughter and my wife out there with me. So fireworks show is awesome too.
That's the Packers tight end Tucker Kraft with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight, some areas of smoke and lows in the mid-50s. Hazy sunshine from the smoke tomorrow, highs in the upper 70s. And mostly sunny and near 80 Sunday for the forecast high. Some storms Sunday night and Monday. Right now it's 76.
I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. If you're looking for honest talk, real stories, and straight-up news that matters to you, tune in to The Rick Smith Show. We're digging into the issues that affect your job, your family, your future. Join me weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network, because your voice deserves to be heard. That's The Rick Smith Show, heard weeknights at 9 right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day, when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
Todd Alba.
Hey, everybody. Join us Monday for an important show. Measles is on the rise. Vaccinations are down. We talk to the folks at Wisconsin Watch what that means for you. Join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to The Eagle, WLCX, Lacrosse's home for The Todd Alba Show.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
While Maggie is enjoying some time off, here are some of our favorite moments over the last few weeks. The Best of the Maggie Dawn Show continues now.
That is what makes democracy great. The power in a democracy is derived from the people. It resides in the people. These individuals that we have elected don't hold those seats in perpetuity.
Now, the Maggie Dawn Show continues.
Why are we cutting Medicaid, which is overwhelmingly popular with both Democrats and Republicans?
From Congress and courts to burgers and baseball.
You know what we need in the United States is more paperwork.
Once again, here's lawyer and economist Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. And happy hump day Wednesday. Well, it's been an afternoon of breaking news, and we've got a great guest joining us to talk about some of that breaking news. We're joined this half hour by State Senator Chris Larson of the Senate Fighting District 7. Welcome, Senator Larson. A bit of a kerfuffle over the last hour or so about whether or not Governor Evers is running for re-election. Some sources saying he's going to announce that he's not running for a third term. And his spokesperson then responding on X within the last, I don't know, handful of minutes that, that's not an actual thing. Your reactions to all the hubbub, sir.
Yeah, I people have been talking about this for quite a while, but I guess we'll find out whenever they make an announcement. For our part, I would hope that Tony Evers does read the room and is ready to pass the baton to the next generation to be able to make sure that we actually have people who are ready to fight for our state.
So let's talk about that, Senator. You were harshly critical of the governor's budget. Tell us about some of those reasons why you were critical of the governor's budget, which, again, not really the governor's budget when we're playing on a Republican playing field.
Yeah, I mean, look, we have a different legislature than we had before. We're within two seats in the Senate. We're within five seats in the House. And so for us, you also have a Democratic governor. And so you would hope that, especially when it became clear that they needed to have Democratic votes to be able to pass this, that the first Democratic vote was going to have quite a price tag associated with it about what it would get that first Democratic vote versus the last Republican vote. You think of the distance between where Republicans are at nationally and where Democrats are at nationally, and how absolutely bonkers the Republicans are of rescinding money for National Public Radio, of sending an armed, masked battalion out into cities where there's peaceful protesters, and where they want to pull away health care away from people who rightfully deserve it. So the first Democratic vote should have a heavy price tag associated with it. That should have included Medicaid expansion, especially when you have a Democratic governor who could stand there and say, we are not going to do something unless it benefits the people. You could have had matching special education reimbursement to make sure that they're getting 90% reimbursement the same way private vouchers are getting them and have been getting it for years. They were not signing the budget unless that's in there. criminal justice reform is a huge one. Making sure that our child care centers are going to be taken care of so that parents can actually continue to work, and that we don't have one quarter of the child care centers shutting down as is being predicted. Any one of those things, or more, right, should have been a red line in this budget. Instead, we catered to Republicans and what their red lines were, and none of those things were ever even on the table. Tony Evers made very clear to the Democrats that he would sign whatever budget was put in front of him. If it was good or if it was bad, he wanted to get a budget done. That's what he did the last budget. It's what he did the budget before that. It's what he did the budget before that. And you know what? Maybe in different times, in normal times, that would have been fine. But right now, the working people of the state of Wisconsin are under siege, and we need to have a fighter. I just wish the governor would have done that. So.
Let me just hop in and ask very briefly. Let me just ask very briefly. Doesn't some of the criticism rely on the assumption that Republicans would blink? They don't have to blink. Was there an analysis for you of downside risk in the interim period? Are those things reasonably all actually achievable when you have a legislature that is correctly, as you point out, by much smaller margins, still controlled by Republicans?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think it benefits us to give up in advance by not trying, right? I think we're rewarding their intransigence by saying that they are refusing, like, and we have used cynicism as an excuse to be able to say, well, they would never go for this. Well, why? Why are we not talking about expanding Badger Care, expanding Medicaid to 133% of poverty, because it would get 90% match from the federal government? It would net us $750 million.
And Senator, I won't disagree with you with any of those points, and I don't think the governor would either. But the question is that actually possible given a Republican-controlled legislature? And right. If we're going to criticize the budget, how do we then unify to beat Republicans, the candidates coming out for the governor's race from the Republican side, and actually take control of the legislature in 26? Right? Like, what is actually possible? Because I don't think I've heard Tony Evers say he doesn't want any of those things that you just articulated.
Well, I mean, he put them in his budget, and then that was it. I don't think he made the stump around the state saying that this is what we absolutely need to have and making the case, which, by the way, these are wildly popular things. And this isn't just a blue state or a red state or a purple state. This has happened in states across the country. All but 10 states have expanded Medicaid because it's the right thing to do.
And of course it is. But again, my question is about the political realities of the budget itself and the time pressures and what happens with no budget when the big brutal bill gets passed and adopted. What happens when some of those funding sources runs out? How long can we withstand no budget or a veto or a standoff with no budget? And who ends up paying the price in the interim? Do you think Republicans blink if we get into, frankly, a game of chicken with them over the budget?
Well, we blinked. I mean, we blinked immediately. So, like,
argument. I mean, the other argument is you get the best deal you can when you don't control the legislature. And I think the question that you're pointing correctly to, Senator, is what was actually in the realm of possibility? What was achievable given the voting margins, right? And again, I agree with absolutely everything you're saying on the substantive merits of all of these issues.
Yeah, and I would say, look, the budget started when he ended up introducing it back in February. And so you had February to talk about it. You had March to talk about it, April, May. And it was only in June that we actually got to the point where there was any discussion about whether Democrats' votes would be required. And we knew from the beginning that they were going to need Democratic votes. But it was only the last week that they finally brought Democrats into the room. And they basically said, look, these are the things that are off the table. And then that timeline, right, then the clock is ticking. And you have the theatrics of, like,
yeah,
the ticking clock trying to get things
the
done
urgency
before the end of the
Let me ask you a question about the necessity of Democratic votes. Had Republicans remained completely unified, they wouldn't have needed Democratic votes. Moreover, haven't Republicans in the last few years, maybe I'll say a decade within the state and certainly under the MAGA regime and the craziness of Trump, been an incredibly unified party? So until Voss and other Republican leaders couldn't make the votes tally, it wasn't certain that they were going to need Democratic votes to pass the budget. Was it?
No, it was clear. Yeah, no, it was clear on the Republican side and the Senate for sure. You're right. On the Assembly side, Robin Voss has some type of trance that he has also been Republicans.
The Pied Piper.
Yeah, I don't know what the heck is going on there. But he literally was accounting for their votes through fear and intimidation. In the Senate, that was not the case, right? You had a number of folks who said up front, Chris Capanga and Steve Nass, who were able to say that we are not going to be voting for this. You knew that they were going to need votes, and the margin was so close. And so we knew that way, way, way in advance. And frankly, that wasn't just me talking about it. It was a lot of Democrats talking about it. And it was only at the very end that they finally realized, okay, we need to bring you into the room. And Maggie, that was because the Republicans were counting on Tony Evers turning Democratic votes over. And luckily our leader, Dianne Hesselbein, said we are not going to be offering up any votes unless we're in the room negotiating. And again, those conversations unfortunately didn't start until a week before the budget passed. And I think like there was a huge mistake if we would have had a governor who was willing to work with us in partnership and be able to say, let's get the best deal that we can for the people in the state of Wisconsin, then it would have been a very different conversation about how we get to these things that are frankly wildly popular. Everything that I said is wildly popular publicly, and instead we're rewarding Republicans for their cynicism and their inability to actually care and govern and do things that are actually helping the people. And yeah,
This has been a persistent problem. Granted, with the new maps, the margins reduce. My question to you, Senator, is if Tony Evers runs again, does the criticism help or hurt the chances of Democrats to hold the state house in the next election cycle? How do we work through the differences within our party and legitimately talk about some of those shortcomings and still maintain a united front when it comes to defeating the MAGA regime here in the state of Wisconsin?
Well, we'll take a step back. And I think it's important to talk about what Democratic rule would actually look like, what our priorities are. And I think we could have been laying those things out. You know, the governor put out his budget, and there's a lot of things in there which gives us something to rally around. But I think if we're going to be making the case of the public, people are talking about us getting a trifecta like it's a given, like it's an automatic.
Right.
There's stuff happening now.
Far from it,
Right now, the Justice Department is talking about trying to be able to get the voter rolls for the state of Wisconsin and other states. Let's not forget that this is not just some normal president. This is a guy who denied the election results of the 2020 election and sent a violent mob onto the Capitol to try and overturn the results of it. He only embraces the results when they go his way. He is not somebody who is for free and fair elections. So we have to really make the case to the public about that. But then beyond that, we need to say how we're going to make people's lives better and show that we're actually fighting for them. And that starts.
Sorry, Senator, I want to just jump in here because no one, I certainly have no disagreement about all of the havoc and threat that MAGA and Donald Trump pose. All those things are true. And yet, I think the question is, how do we engage in real policy debate within the Democratic Party, specifically the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, and yet not weaken the party, not weaken candidates? Can you stick around and come back on the other side? Because I'd love to continue this discussion.
Yeah, happy to.
Awesome. Yeah, We've got Senator Chris Larson of Fighting Senate District 7 with us. We're talking about the hard stuff of politics. When we agree about the most important stuff, but have some disagreement about how to get to the political wins. What do we do about that? We continue our discussion with the senator on the other side. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
Eagle 1490 AM.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Americans really like voting by mail and in-person early voting. That, according to 2024 statistics from the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. According to EAC, 158,211,780 citizens voted out of 211,144,275 active registered voters, a 74.8% turnout, 3 points lower than 2020. Among the 158 million voters, 52.8 million voted in person on Election Day. But far more Americans voted early, with 46.8 million voting early by mail and almost 48.9 million voting early in person. Mail-in voting accounted for 30.3% of votes cast, with some states offering universal mail balloting or permanent mail or absentee lists. Over 15 million ballots were returned via drop boxes in 36 states, up 10% since 2022. The percentage of in-person Election Day voters dropped in 2024 to only 37.4%, while in-person early voting jumped to 35.2%. The combination of mail and early in-person totaled 65.5%. It's clear that early voting is here to stay. We've linked to the report at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
I love playing sports, especially for my school. And that's because school sports are special. It's where it's safe to fail. It's where we're taught resilience, where our fear becomes confidence. It's where we learn to get back up after every fall. School sports are where 7.8 million students go from I can't to I can.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Small businesses are the heart of America. As the nation's largest nonprofit resource of expert business mentoring, SCORE has helped millions of entrepreneurs build their businesses for free. Find a mentor today at score.org.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
While Maggie is enjoying some time off, here are some of our favorite moments over the last few weeks. The Best of the Maggie Dawn Show continues now.
Welcome back, everybody. It's been a lot of action here in Wisconsin's state politics in recent days. Topic du jour is Tony Evers running for re-election. We got State Senator Chris Larson with us of Senate District 7. He voted against the biennial budget. We've been exploring how to have real policy, perhaps departure points and disagreements within the Democratic Party, and yet not weaken the party, and yet understand that coming together and unifying to defeat what are existential threats from Donald Trump and the MAGA regime, you know, that's a challenge. In fact, President Obama at a fundraiser last Friday pointed to exactly this very challenge that we face. He said this: there has been some argument between the left of the party and people who are promoting the quote-unquote abundance agenda. Those things are not contradictory. We have to deliver for people and make their lives bigger, better. You got to figure out how to do it. Right now, what we need is courage. Democrats got to toughen up. He sort of lambasted the navel gazing, the idea of perfect versus the possible. Senator Larson, listen, I think there's in every budget, there's going to be criticisms to be made. It is difficult. The governor has to win election, and he requires voters that may be more centrist. You have a very safe blue district. There's arguably less political risk that, for you than there would be for someone that's running for statewide race. How do we bridge the gulf, still have these good faith arguments, policy debates within the big tent of Democrats, and not weaken the party?
I mean, I reject the premise of the
of the question, right? I think we have to have these debates, and if we're not, we're never going to get to the best possible solution, right? Like, conflict yields some type of a result, and especially now, there should be some conflict because people have been getting screwed over for way too long. And I think that sometimes there's this tendency to view like the what's politically possible as like a flat two-dimensional board where it's like, here's the thing on the left, here's the thing on the right, and it just moves like, you know, one dot around it. And it's like, well, where does it end up? Is it in the middle? Is it towards the left? And the reality is these things are policies that frankly, in many cases, that are wildly publicly popular. And Republicans, who are more beholden to the rich and corporations than Democrats are, they end up saying and labeling those things as being extreme, as being impossible, and some things that we could never do. But at the same time, if you gaze over their shoulders and look in other states, they're already happening. Or if we dare to look beyond our own borders, these are things that are happening in many, many other countries. Things like having access to paid family leave, right? Being able to take time off after you have a baby, making sure that public education is a right and that we are actually enshrining it in our Constitution as we have, but actually backing it up with funding so that a child now is not worth less than they were 18 years ago, like you have in the state of Wisconsin, $3,000. And I think you have to make those cases publicly to be able to say, this is, if they are voting for this, this is what they are voting for. And I think if there's just a tendency to count noses and to count heads and to be able to say, well, you know what, do we really want to go to the mat and fight for this? Or do we just want to say, okay, we're going to give in and maybe we'll fight somewhere down the road? My question is when, if not now, when are we going to fight? Because it has been 18 years. I care so much about public education because it is the bedrock on which democracy is built. It gives access to folks to knowledge that they can use to be able to make the world a better place.
Yeah, I as a sort of poster child for the Wisconsin educational system and a proud graduate of Rufus King High School for the College Bound, I'm absolutely with you on all of the substance of the things that you're talking about. Specifically, here's what I completely agree with when it comes to political frames. Democrats have far too long have been reactive to the Republican frame of political dialogue. That's what's got to change. But when does the criticism become itself a weakness? When do we set that aside, still have those debates internally, and then, and frankly, as an economist, what I think of is downside risk of harm. Right? Like the risk of harm if a Republican becomes governor in this state is frankly existential for some communities. When do we have to set the differences aside, if ever, Senator? We got about a minute.
Yeah, no, and in this case, I would say, look, I've privately criticized the governor for years and been pushing for a better budget. I have encouraged him to veto it and say, look, we cannot afford this. He, in this budget, did not fight for the 90% reimbursement, and even that, he condemned Jill Underly when she introduced her budget that did have that in there, which, why not push for that, right? He was trying to be more practical with 60, settled at 45, and he gave, for the first time since the year 2010, $0 in general aid for our public schools, which means that they're going to have less. And I get the argument of saying compromise for compromise sake, because then we can get reelected. But like,
let me be clear. That is not at all what I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting that the risk of harm to many communities is so existential that if the perfect is not in fact possible, when do we step back from the brink? Senator Larson, I hope we can continue what I think is the most important political discussion of our time. Senator, let me ask you this last question. Are you running for governor?
Look, what happens with the governor here? I am not thrilled with what he is doing, and I think that there's a lot of qualified people who are going to step forward. We can frankly have this debate in the public, but doing it behind closed doors and pretending that everything's fine is netting us further and further behind as a state. And it's the reason why it's not just me, but other people are coming out and saying, this is the problem.
We got to leave it right there. Thank you to Senator Chris Larson of the 7th Senate District. I'll be right back here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to the Eagle, WLCX, La Crosse's home for Matt and Air on Air.
As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska. A southern Wisconsin county is the latest example being used in the debate over immigration. With more, here's Civic Media's Savannah Tomei Olson.
The Dane County Sheriff's Office says a woman was driving drunk when she got into a crash that ended up killing two Minnesota teenagers. It happened July 20th in the town of Vienna, and the controversy began after the tragedy. The alleged drunk driver, 30-year-old Noelia Martinez, is here illegally from Honduras. So after her arrest, Immigration and Customs Enforcement asked the Dane County Sheriff's Office to put a detainer on Martinez. That would mean if she made bail, the Sheriff's Office would keep her in custody so ICE could start the process to deport her. The Dane County Sheriff's Office does not honor those detainers. They're a request and not legally binding. Instead, they wait for an arrest warrant signed by a judge. Sheriff Barrett.
This is about the process and not about politics.
That set off a firestorm. Barrett has now received criticism directly from the Department of Homeland Security. Assistant Secretary Tricia McLaughlin called Dane County a sanctuary community, and Wisconsin Congressman Tom Tiffany lashed out at Sheriff Barrett on X. I asked Barrett about that.
It's typical, right? It's very typical, very expected. They take one little thing, they harp on the word sanctuary city, and they're trying to turn it into something that it's not. I do know that there are extremes, and those that are on the extreme side of this are going to believe what they want no matter what. But I do know there's a significant amount of people that are in the middle that are going to listen to this and move towards understanding really what this is about and not be jaded by the political theatrics of this.
Barrett also said deporting Martinez would be like giving her a free ticket home instead of justice for the two lives lost. The next hearing in the case is September 22nd. For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
You can take Civic Media with you anywhere you go with the free Civic Media app. Download it now from your device's app store or at civicmedia.us/app. For 1490 WLCX, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. The Law & Order franchise has been teasing its viewers for years regarding a romance between detectives Olivia Benson and Elliot Stabler, played respectively by Mariska Hargitay and Christopher Maloney. Fans on social media have been asking when it will happen. Maloney recently told the New York Post he's been trying to get them to hook up for a long time. Hargitay says she is enjoying the flirt game and is keeping an open mind about the situation. Maloney currently stars in Law & Order Organized Crime, and Hargitay is in her I Lost Count season of Law & Order SVU. DC Studios may have made a lot of money over the years, but they haven't had a film that's reached the $300 million plateau domestically since 2022. Thanks to James Gunn's Superman just crossed the mark. This is the 9th DC movie to reach $300 million here in the U.S. The last DC film to hit that mark was The Batman 3 years ago. I'm sure DC would like even more cha-ching, so be sure to check out Superman, which is still in theaters. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy tonight, some areas of smoke and lows in the mid-50s. Hazy sunshine from the smoke tomorrow, highs in the upper 70s. And mostly sunny and near 80 Sunday for the forecast high. Some storms Sunday night and Monday. Right now it's 78 degrees.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Frank Anderson, who is the founder of Wisconsinology.com. You were great in the documentary. That's really exciting.
I'm really not as a documentary filmmaker because I get bored so quick. You have to really dig into your subject, and you got to show up every day, sometimes for years, to let a story unfold or to find the story. I'm good for one day.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Pat Kreitlow.
On Monday morning, Up North News reporter Selena Heller will talk to Jimmy Cuska, Jane Mattenair.
And me.
Oh, that's Dr. Kristen Lierley. She'll be here too.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
While Maggie is enjoying some time off, here are some of our favorite moments over the last few weeks. The Best of the Maggie Dawn Show continues now.
Welcome back, everybody. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a fine guest co-host with me for the remainder of this hour. It's Angela Lang from Block. And we are now joined by two great guests to talk about fusion voting and the recent lawsuit that was fired to allow us all to actually express our values in the voting booth. Who knew? We've got Jeff Mandel, attorney from Law Forward, and John Frankie, an attorney for United Wisconsin, former assistant district attorney in Milwaukee. You may remember John if you've been around Milltown for a few years. He helped with the prosecution and led the prosecution of Frank Balistrieri. It was, what did they call it, like the Super Bowl of trials or the World Series of trials back then. Quite a feat. Welcome, gentlemen, to the show. Let's start with the basics, John. I'll kick it to you. Tell us, what the heck is fusion voting and why haven't we ever heard of this?
Well, it's really very simple. You haven't heard of it, I guess, because it hasn't been around in Wisconsin for a while. But it's simply a process where the law allows two political groups to nominate the same person for a particular office. It's really that simple. Right now, under the Wisconsin law, once someone has nominated a candidate, another group cannot nominate that same candidate. With fusion voting, another group, another political party, is allowed to nominate the same person and seek their interest in that party's platform.
So to be clear, instead of having, for example, one Green Party candidate, one independent, one Republican, one Democrat, you might have a Green Party and Republicans nominating and supporting the same candidate. Am I getting this right?
Yes, although that example may not be the most likely. In Wisconsin, for example, you might not be surprised to see, say, the Libertarian Party and nominate the same person that nominated by the Republicans. You might see the Green Party decide to nominate the same person nominated by the Democrats. They wouldn't have to do that. And then minor parties would still be free to nominate their own candidates if they want to, but they would have the choice, the option, to support a candidate who had a realistic chance of winning.
So, Jeff, if you can, and by the way, John, I picked those examples because they were strange bedfellows indeed. Please do not take my hypo as a lack of knowledge about who is likely to align. But Jeff, and then I'm going to toss it to Angela for her questions. So why is this preferred to how we've got things now? Like, what advantage for the average voter does fusion voting provide?
Well, most voters in Wisconsin and around the country say that they don't fully agree with either political party. And they are forced into a situation where they have to choose. How often have we heard that an election is a choice of the lesser of two evils? And the idea here is that this would give people more choice. It would give people additional options because it would allow smaller parties to a way to grow and build so that you don't feel like you're choosing between a candidate you don't fully support, or maybe there is a third party candidate who you're really excited about, but you know that if you do that, you're throwing away your vote. And so this is a way to allow those parties to grow and build. And it has deep roots in Wisconsin history. This is how the Republican Party was formed in Wisconsin before the Civil War, is a whole bunch of anti-slavery parties came together in Ripon, Wisconsin, and agreed that they were going to use fusion to support each other. And the result of that was the end of the Whigs as a major political party and the creation of the Republican Party that really swept the nation. And once it did, the Republican Party in the states where it had control, like Wisconsin, and the Democratic Party in the South where it had control, banned fusion voting because they'd seen that it was good for voters. It gave people more choice and more power, and they wanted the power. The parties wanted the power for themselves. So they banned fusion voting so it couldn't happen anymore.
So as an organizer, and I'm sure there's so many of my colleagues that are also like very intrigued and thinking of how this could play out. And I think you started to get into it a little bit, but can you explain like how it actually could lead to higher turnout or more engagement in the democratic process in this way? Because I'm hearing it, but it's like, let's be explicit of like how this also is good for democracy and voter turnout too in the future.
Well, I think it's great for democracy because it creates opportunities for parties and candidates to match more closely with voters. So let's think about 2024, for example, right? We had this really spirited primary challenge by Governor Haley, and it fell short. And there was all this talk about, well, where are the Haley voters going to go? They were Republicans, most of them, but many of them were not huge Trump supporters. And so were they going to stick with their party and vote for Trump? Or were they going to vote for a Democrat? And many of them said, I don't want to vote for Trump, but I can't bring myself to vote for a Democrat. Imagine a universe in which there was some kind of moderate party. And the moderate party could decide who it was going to endorse. And maybe that moderate party would meet with then Vice President Harris and say, listen, if you will commit to a couple of our policy priorities, we will endorse you. And then some people who might not be willing to vote for you as a Democrat will be willing to vote for you on the moderate line. And at the end of the day, all the votes get added together. Or maybe those people, instead of Trump being able to assume that they would come home to the Republican Party, maybe the moderate party could meet with him and say, look, you need to make some promises to us. You need to promise to moderate yourself in certain ways. And if you do that, we will endorse you. So the idea is to create more power for voters by having third parties that actually have some leverage.
John, if I can, this effort's being supported by former Republican State Senate Majority Leader Dale Schultz, who is the co-chair of United Wisconsin. You are a former circuit court judge and a Republican appointee to the now it's something else Wisconsin Government Accountability Board. Do you see this as an opportunity for voters to have options for more moderate candidates that effectively speak to sort of the fat of the bell curve, which at some points in time, I feel like we're missing, like who's that voice in some races? Is that what's motivating you and your clients to get involved in this lawsuit?
Well, that is what's motivating United Wisconsin and our clients. And the answer, clearly, this will allow for more choice. Jeff mentioned this before, but there are three really important and interesting statistics, and they vary from month to month or poll to poll. But you have to start with the proposition that roughly a third, sometimes more than a third, of voters do not identify as either a Democrat or a Republican. That independent group or people who affiliate with the smaller parties has often been up around 40%. So the question is, and then another statistic is simply that the percent of people who have an unfavorable view of both parties has increased dramatically. In 1994, it was something like 6%, which I think people today would find surprising. And it meant that people didn't look at political parties badly. They might not agree with one party or another, but only 6% had an unfavorable view of both parties. And that's up to something like 28% now. So the question is, where do those people go, and shouldn't they have a choice that they do not have right now?
And on a personal note, I'll just say this and then toss it to Angela. John, for someone who's had people from both the right and left try to characterize my politics, I'm an economist and very socially liberal, but having served in government, I always viewed myself as a fiduciary of a taxpayer dollar and with a high desire to see the most efficient, transparent, and effective outcomes for taxpayers, and felt like we had an obligation to deliver that. And so tension, dissatisfaction, I feel very deeply in a lot of election cycles, especially in this moment where we're looking at a budget reconciliation bill that I think is going to pose challenges for a lot of middle-class families, and yet we have an exploding deficit. And what do we do about that as well? These are current challenges that will affect Republicans, Democrats, and the voters that are like, I ain't either of those two things. Angela, you had a great question for Jeff.
Yeah, so I think, you know, again, speaking from like an organizer, it's just like, ooh, okay, how do we explain this to people, right? And so I'm curious, because I think there's going to be a whole educational component if this does happen. So curious of how we break this down, but specifically the difference between ranked choice voting and fusion voting. People may have heard of ranked choice or some places that have that. How do you all like distinguish between the two? And like, what's an easy Cliff Notes way to educate folks on that?
Well, it's a great question. There are two different electoral reforms. I think most people believe that our politics aren't working right now and that there's something that we can do better. And so these are two different ways to try to solve that, and they are not incompatible. Ranked choice voting is an effort to have more candidates and then to just keep, you get to vote for all of them and rank them in order, and it reduces down until somebody gets a majority. This would be a different way to go about the problem. And it would say that multiple parties could nominate the same candidate and you aggregate the votes for each candidate. You could actually do them together. And I think there might be a couple of places that are experimenting with that. I want to go back very quickly to your question before, Angela, about organizing and pick up on something Maggie just said about sort of having heterodox politics, you know, being a little bit out of the ordinary. Mm-hmm. The other way that this can work organizing-wise is there are lots of voters who care more at any given time about one issue than others. So if Maggie, for example, reached a moment where she said, the budget is the most important thing to me, there might be a budget party that would endorse candidates regardless of their other positions because they were pledged to do the most about the budget. Or you might imagine in, you know, when I think about the work that Block does, you might imagine in a district attorney's race in Milwaukee mm-hmm. County saying, look, we know there's a lot going on, but these are our main issues. And whichever candidate comes closest to us on these main issues, we're endorsing that candidate. Mm-hmm. And so it really, I think that this is an incredibly powerful tool for organizing.
Mm. I hear that. I think there's a lot of education that can go behind it. But I also do think that like the long term organizing, as you said, is something that I think is really interesting. I think also, again, of trying to build more a democracy, right? Because like our democracy only works when we have as much participation as possible. Asterisk, given the current climate we're in, right? It's a little fragile. But how are we bringing more folks in and not turning people off because of the federal landscape, which I think is what's happening right now?
This is all about creating, you know, promoting competition, creating a more robust politics. Keep in mind that the reason that so many places around the country got rid of fusion voting, you know, more than a century ago was because it worked. It was good for voters. And so we think if we can bring it back, is it a silver bullet that will solve everything about our politics? Almost certainly not. But is it one small piece that can help make things better? I think it really can.
Folks, we have got Angela Lang, my special guest co-host with me this hour. We've got two special guests talking about fusion voting and the fact that it doesn't have to be like this, that we deserve better and it can be better. We've got John Franke of the law firm Gass Turek. He's a former Wisconsin Circuit Court judge and Republican appointee to the Government Accountability Board. He helps represent United Wisconsin, who filed a lawsuit. And I want to talk more about what's in the lawsuit and why this is a core constitutional right of every voter to have the option of fusion voting, to see this work better. We've got Jeff Mandel, who is the president and general counsel of Law Forward. We've got each and every one of you. Stay with us. Come back on the other side. We got a question from Steve from Greene County and more discussion up next right here on the Civic Media Radio Network, 855-752-4842.
Scan item. as Wisconsin is saying the word bag instead of bag. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Let's go Brewers!
You can go to the Brewers.
Wait, Todd, what?
It's Free Ticket Friday, Terry. A chance to win a four-pack of Brewers tickets several times every Friday. Great seats, by the way.
Okay, so download the free Civic Media app, find your local station, and listen for the keyword. Then text it through the app for your chance to win in this statewide contest.
Free Ticket Friday!
On your local Civic Media radio station and the app.
America is kept safe because the Army National Guard responds, protects, and supports our nation when it needs them most. From fighting wildfires with air support, helping civilians in flooded neighborhoods, to delivering food and supplies to those who have lost everything, the Army National Guard always responds when disaster strikes. The Army National Guard also trains to be ever vigilant against threats, foreign and domestic. They protect our skies with missile defense weaponry. They secure our information, communications, and infrastructure with cybersecurity. And they protect us against chemical, biological, and radiological hazards with the civilian support team. The Army National Guard also stands ready to deploy and provide support for conflicts or humanitarian missions abroad. Join the Army National Guard and be there to respond, protect, and support your community and your country. Visit NationalGuard.com to learn more about part-time service. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
Where working people come to talk. It's the Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network. Join me for an honest approach to the issues American working families care about. No talking points, no focus groups. Get ready for a heavy dose of democracy, fairness, grit, and no apologies. It's current affairs from a working class labor perspective. Facts are center, science is real, and everyone gets a seat at the table. The Rick Smith Show, weeknights at 9 on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
One of the most basic things that a free people could want, not going bankrupt because of healthcare. If it sounds like I'm banging my head against the microphone, yeah, it's that we are having this discussion about having to hold benefits for people because they didn't have proper health insurance coverage, because they're threatened with bankruptcy, which again happens in no other developed country in the world.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Rebuilding and refreshing local radio one station at a time. This Civic Media radio station is proud to be a part of your community. Learn more at civicmedia.us.
You're listening to pre-recorded content.
While Maggie's enjoying some time off, here are some of our favorite moments over the last few weeks. The Best of the Maggie Dawn Show continues now.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got Angela Lang of Block with me, alongside Jeff Mandel of Law Forward and John Frankie, attorney for United Wisconsin of the law firm Gass Turek. We are discussing together and with you this afternoon the opportunity that awaits for Wisconsin voters in fusion voting. Do you hate the political parties the way that they're constituted? Do you look at the lineup on your ballot and go, I don't like any of these choices. Where are my real options? Well, John and Jeff have filed a lawsuit to help do exactly that, and that is bring Wisconsin voters more choice. It's called fusion voting. They're here to talk about it. In a nutshell, fusion voting is where more than one political party can endorse a different candidate. By opening up this possibility, it would allow different parties to come to different candidates, perhaps of the two major parties, and say, hey, we need you to consider our policy platform on these particular issues. We need you to moderate your position or to consider these other issues and endorse them. And in return, we'll consider endorsing you. Overarchingly, this would have potentially a moderating impact on candidates and give voters the opportunity to see candidates that potentially better reflect their overall values. I'll pause there, Jeff, first. Am I getting that right? Do you need to make any corrections? I don't like to say incorrect things without editing them for listeners. And if I am correct, if you could explain what the basis for the lawsuit to challenge the way that political parties and elections currently work in Wisconsin, what's the argument that you all are making?
Sure. You've largely got it right, Maggie. Although I would say, yes, it could have a moderating impact. But really what fusion voting is for anyone who feels that the political parties aren't meeting their needs and the candidates aren't where they want them to be. So if you look at the candidates and you think, I wish a party I feel close to was different, or I wish there was a party I felt close to, then fusion voting is for you. And that could be about making candidates more moderate. It could be about making them care about other things. Whatever issues you want, the goal is to make our democracy work better and have the candidates and the political process be more responsive to people's wishes. The way we're going to do this, the way the lawsuit is built, is under the state constitution, right? We don't often enough talk about the state constitution in our country. This is something you and I have spoken about before in the context of other lawsuits, but we're really working to build state constitutional law and look at how Wisconsin is supposed to work under our own Wisconsin constitution. And there are several provisions of our state constitution that the ban on fusion voting interferes with or violates, including the free speech of parties, of political parties that want to nominate a candidate and can't because someone else has already beaten them to the punch and nominated that candidate, the free association of voters and candidates who want to associate with each other and are restricted to do so, the guarantee under our state constitution that we will maintain a free government here, consistent with our core principles and recurrence to those common values that we look back to in our history. And I spoke before the break about how much of a role fusion voting played in Wisconsin history. We think that it's really important that the court, in looking at this, say, this is part of our history. This is something that the people who wrote our Constitution understood. The people who wrote our Constitution were really from different political parties than we think about now. And they understood this, and we should be bringing it back to make our democracy work the way they understood and anticipated.
You know, those little things like freedom of speech, free association, the teeny weeny little constitutional concepts. Angela, I wanted to give you the chance to ask or make some additional commentary before I turn to our listeners' questions.
Yeah, I just had a quick question. I think it should be simple. What's the timeline for this, right? If folks are interested and they're interested in following it, what's the timeline that you all are anticipating?
John?
Well, Jeff, go ahead. I think you have as good a sense as to the likely timing of this as anyone.
Well, we filed this lawsuit early in May and or at the very end of April. And so we expect we'll hear back from we sued the Wisconsin Elections Commission, which oversees our elections and is in charge of keeping this from happening, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so we expect that they'll respond by the middle of June, and then we'll have to see. But I would hope that by the fall, we'll be moving and people will be starting to hear what's happening in court.
Here's a question from Steve in Greene County. If either of you gentlemen can briefly answer this, we got about a minute left. If this is ultimately successful, I would imagine that you will need also enabling or enacting legislation to specify the mechanics of this to avoid the situation where you would have an intentionally nefarious party like the Nazi Party endorse a candidate to attempt to like tank their candidacy. Is that part of what, you know, we'd have to work through the particulars here to make sure it works right?
Candidates still have to accept a nomination, right? You can't just foist yourself on a candidate. So a candidate would have the opportunity to be affiliated with the party or not. Whether there would be new legislation or rules, we'd have to see. But this is really pretty simple. We just want to get rid of the prohibition that exists right now in Wisconsin law.
Folks, we've had Jeff Mandel of Law Forward and John Franke, attorneys for United Wisconsin, John Franke of Glass Turek, and of course, Angela Lang, my guest co-host with me every 4 to 5 p.m.
every Tuesday, the executive director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
Soaring high above La Crosse, this is Eagle 1490 AM WLCX La Crosse, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The jobs report shows 73,000 hires in all of July. That's lower than expected. And May and June numbers were also revised downward. The president now firing the commissioner of the Bureau of Labor and Statistics, a Biden appointee, confirmed by the Senate, claiming the revisions are fake. Here's ABC's Stephen Portnoy.
There's nothing in the law that prevents the president from doing this, but the criticism has been sharp. And not just from Democrats, from economists who say, think of how this data is used by large corporations, by small businesses. This is an entity that not just measures the labor force, the unemployment rate, but also, for example, inflation.
In Montana, police and federal agents are searching for a shooter who killed at least four people at the Anaconda Deer Lodge. That's north of Butte. He's considered armed and dangerous. More than 1,300 flights have been canceled nationwide today due to volatile storms this week and smoke from Canada wildfires drifting into the Midwest, with Chicago logging the worst air quality in the world. This is ABC News.